fish, heads, roly-poly fish, heads, fish, heads, fish, heads, eat them up, yum. Fish, heads, fish, heads, roly-poly fish.
Happy welcome to Catch It, Cook It, Eat It. I have Tom, BMW mechanic extraordinaire, in the studio with me. This guy is a force when it comes to BMWs getting, in my opinion, great work done on your old two-wheeled machine. And he just so happens to also be a diehard fisherman. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks, Ben. It's really good. I enjoy being here, and thanks for having me.
Now, Tom sounds, you know, lively and not at all intimidating when you listen to his voice, but there are many people who would tell you otherwise, that you have quite a reputation.
What you talking about?
Where did you get the reputation?
Oh, just a couple of ignorant weasels that couldn't speak to my face, and they had to go on that old web and with some kind of anonymity and a pseudonym of a name, make some kind of a comment, and, you know, the type of people that have balls from 50 yards.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Well, you've always been nice to me and very professional, but let me just read a few comments.
Go right ahead. Knock yourself out.
It seems to evoke extreme responses. Let's see. I want to do the not nice ones first, yeah?
Go ahead.
Okay. Just because you have plenty of good ones to back you up as well, but here we go. Tom of late has become known as a bit difficult to work with. His pick-and-choose ethic is not the easiest to work with. Tom is rude and a pretentious mechanic.
Boo-hoo.
Boo-hoo. Crazy, disrespectful, rude. But then we have phenomenal, completely trust your classic bike with this guy.
That was the same guy. Didn't he say the same thing? Like the pros and cons at the very end.
Oh, it may be. I have nothing but great things to say about this, Tom. Mm. This guy is not moody, though he is a bit abusive and childish.
I'll take the moody.
So
it all depends on what time you get me.
I see.
You know, if you're going to drop by unannounced,
yeah,
I'm going to give you some moodiness. I'm coming to your house middle of the night, knocking on your door and say, hey, Ben, what do you say we kick back a couple of beers, all right?
I understand. So it's a business and you have a call first policy.
Right.
Because it's most of the time it's you. Now you have Jeff in there, but I mean,
Appointment only. Yeah.
And how did you get into, you know, these fine German machines? I say fine German machines. Mine's been nothing but trouble. What?
Yours has the potential. It'll get there.
What is the problem with mine, by the way? Where are we on that?
We shipped the cylinders out to South Carolina, and they're going to get resleeved and matched to the pistons that you think were in the bike.
The guy can do it?
I'll find out, hopefully, you know, next week. We've got the holiday season right now, so I'm not expecting them to jump on it, and it's going down snail mail anyway.
Okay. So. I'll just say this. If you guys have been stupid enough to purchase a vintage bike, go to Tom. If you haven't yet, don't buy one because it's nothing but money down the tubes.
I tell everybody, don't be the cart before the horse.
Right.
You know, typical guy, he's got to shut down his right brain and, it's something shiny and it's retro.
I saw it on eBay.
I tell him, listen, go get it checked out. For a lousy 60, 70, 80 bucks, you could be saving yourself a money pit. Lemon kind of machine.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and your policy, this is why it works for me working with you, because though you're spending a lot of money and though at times you can be a little cranky, you provide photographs, you provide a checklist, you provide detailed information on the parts you've ordered, the parts you've installed, the parts you haven't installed, maybe you could find cheaper. So that there's choices. So at least when you're spending that kind of money, you're being informed.
Right. Now, I believe in full disclosure. When I grew up, I didn't have somebody showing me, holding me by the hand and explaining every little detail, minutia. A lot of people don't have the technical background. So I'll document things. I'll take pictures. Right. Typically, when you take apart a machine that's 30, 35, 40 years old, well, it doesn't come apart as easily as it did right. when it was brand new.
I hear sometimes the chatter.
And that's where the customer incurs more money. Yeah. So, and here I can prove and document that, right. you know, I went through this hardship. And,
yeah, because it's not a science for you. You have to bring out a saw sometimes sure. or a welder or yeah. whatever. Yeah.
yeah, I don't have x-ray vision, so yeah. it's a little tough. And, again, I try to educate people right. to get into some kind of a mode and understand that, you know, what the cheap form of transportation you bought just turned out to be not so cheap.
No, not so cheap. Yeah. It's like having a sports car, basically, but a cooler looking one.
Right.
So just so everybody knows, that's 316 Carroll Street. If you're well behaved and you do a little bit of research before you come to Tom, I guarantee he'll be your best mechanic in the city.
Listen, courtesy goes a long way. Okay. All right, I've always said that.
Oh yeah, bring him some beer.
I don't need any beer. I'm just saying, you know, courtesy is contagious, right. and I basically treat people the way. They want to be treated, but right. if they come to me with an attitude thinking yeah. that, you got a public business and I'm just going to walk in and I'm going to tell you what and you're going to do and
you
how you're going to do it.
You don't need their business.
I go right in their face and tell them, listen, yeah. you know, I'm not the only Coca-Cola in the desert, man. Go get an education. Go somewhere
right.
else.
Right.
And sometimes they have some humility and right. they come back and sometimes it takes years.
I won't disclose who gave me this information, but when I put your name into my phone, having never met you,
right.
my friend's like, dude, this guy, he's crazy. Just put him in as Crazy Tom. I don't know his last name,
okay.
but put him in as Crazy Tom. Like, right. if you're nice to him, you might get lucky,
right.
and he'll do good work. But so anyways, you're in my phone as Crazy Tom. I don't even know your last name.
That works fine. Yeah. If I told you, I'd have
or
to
Or maybe it's
you.
Angry Tom. I'm not quite
yeah,
sure.
That works also, along with my angry art.
Right. Yeah. So, all right. So just real quick, when you walk into your shop, there are fish fins, the relics of your catches, past catches, right. hanging all over the place, fishing rods strewn in with beautiful vintage motorcycles. Those are your two passions, aren't they?
They are. They are two of the larger passions I have other than spending time with my kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Tom is known in the neighborhood. Tom got lucky because I have no storage space in New York, and I had this awesome sidecar. And of course, I come back after giving for a good price, Tom, my sidecar, and I come to see that he's not only made my sidecar and my fishing rack look unbelievably cool. I was so jealous. He's now put Christmas decorations all over the sidecar rig.
Yeah, it's all pimped out.
It's got lights on it, and Tom is known as sort of like the Santa Claus of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. St. Nick's, really, because you're German, aren't you?
Right.
And he rides kids around the neighborhood in his sidecar. It's awesome.
That, and I like to show up Christmas Eve and Christmas at a couple of friends that have small kids, and I dress up as Santa, and
right.
I watch them, you know, bounce off the walls, and they see Santa coming off a sidecar hack.
So how this guy got this, terrifying reputation, I have no idea.
Me neither.
But whatever. Anyways, here you are. You don't seem too scary to me. But then again, you know, you haven't finished working on my bike yet.
The problem, the scariness comes in the truth. People yeah. are not used to somebody getting in their face right. and telling them, you know, no bones right. about it. What things are really like. Right. People want sugar coating?
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. It's right. not going to happen. So, I've had grown men cry in my shop just by me telling them what you think. Unearthed. Yeah.
All right. So let's switch to fishing quickly. You, on the way over here, you were telling me that you actually grew up on a fish farm, basically. Well, before there were such a thing as fish farms, really.
Well, my grandparents were fish farmers. And
This was in Germany.
This was in Germany, along the Black Forest.
Mm-hmm.
And they were farmers in general, but they had owned a lot of land. And they had these three giant vats that were fed by a natural stream.
Right.
And they raised all the rainbow trout.
Right.
And basically would sell them to all the restaurants and
right.
people that lived in the area.
So they would how would they start? They would start with small fish, I guess.
I guess they would buy it, buy a small stock of them, right. but I mean eventually they would what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah.
Mature to the right size.
Well,
I guess,
to the right size, but they would also
Oh, they spawn
they would
too.
Procreate.
Oh,
right?
Can they?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know they could in captivity. Yeah. But maybe that's to do with the fresh water that's going through there.
Right.
Because it's actually like they're living on a river. It's just they can't go too far.
Right.
So then tell me the story about your early fishing days.
Well, I was always jonesing to go fishing.
You were cheating, by the way.
Yeah. I ended up made my own fishing pole and went down to the concrete vats and caught six of the trout and walked across the wheat fields a couple of miles to get back to the house and felt all proud and all. And as soon as I walked in the door, my grandmother looked at me and with total discern and said, "Okay, follow me." And from that point, we went out into the garden area where the freshwater trough was. And
so wait, so you go with your little handmade pole,
right?
You go into your grandparents. This is their business. This isn't a hobby,
right?
You go and fish out some
in a vat that has about 15,000 trout in it. So I could have just reached over and bonked one with the other end of the pole,
which will bring us to our next story about you bonking fish. But guys, so so then you show up with these six fatties.
At that point, my grandmother decided to show me a lesson and. It started out real simple and easy in gutting the fish and prepping the fish.
And do you think she was on your side at this point?
I thought that things were still in good order. Okay. But I realized that kind of dinner time, everybody else had a nice meal, different food, and I had the fish.
Six fish to eat.
I had to eat all the damn fish, yeah. So I was pretty sick of fish, and I never went down to that vat to fish again.
That is awesome.
Uh-huh.
And then, well, actually, I have a funny story along those lines. My grandfather, growing up, never trusted my father to his fishing equipment. Mm-hmm. So he gave me the key to the fishing cabinet, mm-hmm. to his special closet. And when I would go fishing with my father, I had to tell my father to avert his eyes. And I would open up and I didn't know how mad that made my father. Because, of course, that was beef between the two of them.
Right.
But here I am 6 years old. And I'm like, no, Dad, turn around. Pup says you can't watch me. Good. And for years I knew where that key was and he never knew.
Good stuff.
So then fast forward to your next, I guess, you had brought your fishing to a whole nother level when you went upstate. And
That was just a knucklehead nuts thing in the middle of the summer. Everybody was extremely hot, and we knew of a stop off of, I think it was Route 30 up near Hunter.
Mm.
And all the locals knew of the swimming hole, and everybody else just passed by.
And you're not traditionally a freshwater...
Not at all.
...spear fisherman.
Not at all. No, not at all. But yeah, no, we were cooling off, and one of my buddies says, "You know, Tom, there's a lot of fish down there," and he knew I was into fish. I've always grown up raising my own tropical fish.
Okay.
And
you have tanks? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I
got all
some
that
tanks
nonsense.
Too. Awesome.
So at that point, I was interested, and I decided to, all right, let me go dive down there. And it was only like 6 feet of water, but everything up there is made of shale.
Yeah.
And there was a large shelf of it that just was kind of cut out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just full with about, I don't know, 20, 30 of these brook trout, stone or rock trout.
Yeah.
And they were all like about, 18 inches.
Right.
They were nice sized fish.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I'm gonna catch me one of these damn things. And my friend looked at me like, what are you, nuts?
And how are you going to catch it?
Well, the only thing I had was we were doing barbecue and we were cooking out. So I grabbed one of the large, the two-prong tined forks.
Yeah.
And I went down there and it was like shooting duck in a barrel.
Jesus.
And I just speared the first one that I came up against, and I only had to stand up to get up back up out of the water.
Underwater. So did you actually dive under?
Yeah, well, dive. Under. Yeah, I mean, it was, like I said, it was only 5-6 feet deep.
Did you, like, embody the catch it, cook it, eat it lifestyle?
Yeah, well, that's what we did. But now,
even though you fish in, like, a parameter of, like, 10 feet fishing holes or whatever.
Well, now that he saw me do this, he went down and he caught two more himself, and we started feeding everybody that was... Basically, just chilling out on a hot summer's day.
Right.
Nobody knew these fish were right swimming next to us, underneath this kind of
thing. That's awesome. Yeah. That is awesome.
It was fun.
And so when you, growing up, I guess you grew up with is it German cooking, yeah?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Which would be, what part of Germany were you from?
It's the south, Black Forest.
Right.
Yeah.
You're kind of like a brand, man, between the BMWs and the German.
Well, my father rode, his father rode.
And you look the part.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the only thing you're missing is like some red Doc Martens or something. Uh-huh. But tell me just before we come back, we're going to take a quick break. But how did you get into fishing in New York?
Well, I grew up out in Long Island, and yeah. I always had access to a boat or yeah. Had my folks, they were right on the bay. Spent a lot of time out on the beaches.
Right.
So did everything from surf casting to crabbing to actual inshore fishing. And
so you really,
on a calm day, we'd go offshore and try to get out through Jones Inlet and negotiate the tide and the waves. But that didn't always work out so well.
You're like a true, you are the quintessential Bayman then. You're like an immigrant who came over here at a young age, took up fishing, brought his skill set to, when did you start with the BMW thing? You started that kind of.
Motorcycles in general, since I was probably 2.5 years old, my father had me on bikes. But then I sat on the back of bikes 13 years before I ever rode them, and I've been riding them well over 30 years now.
Right. I will tell anyone who wants to go get their bike worked on and actually chat with Tom, his weak point is fishing. If you come in there with a few photographs of fish, he will, although he's really busy, he'll get distracted and he'll start pulling up fish on his computer.
You need an appointment.
Make an appointment, but I'm telling you, that's his weak spot.
Saturdays I have that Jekyll Hyde thing, I've been told. So
Saturdays are a better day to catch you. Saturday
I'm open to the public. Okay. I only do New York State inspections on Saturdays.
Okay.
And I'm one of the few shops in the area that does it, and I'm not bothered have my attention taken away from the work that I'm doing during the week.
So Saturdays, that's everybody hear that? Go Saturday.
Yeah, good
and
luck with that.
Yeah, and if you plan on meeting Tom without a bike, you better make up a really good story about the bike you have, even if you don't, because he's not there to just chit chat. Or it's okay if you at least have a boat or
it's that courtesy thing. You want to ask first,
right?
Okay, don't just assume.
So as you walk into Tom's place, he's got these fins I was started to tell you about. Amazing, pretty sizable tuna. You have some striped bass tails up there too, don't you?
Got a 100-pound yellowfin.
And they're tacked to your front door.
They're all tacked up above the door, kind of like the good luck horseshoe. I have one of those there too.
And I'm guessing, this isn't for show, obviously, the deep sea rods that you have over your head.
They all are used, yeah.
So you take those out.
Depending on what I'm doing. Yeah.
You haven't taken the sidecar yet with the fishing rig.
I haven't gone fishing with it yet, but I was out the night the Yankees clinched the World Series. And
nice.
Got myself four beautiful stripers out off the Sheep's Head Bay.
The only thing you're missing, I have to show you, is that this little Weber grill actually attaches to the back
you
of
got
the sidecar. It's
have
ready
to
go.
Okay. All
right. And we will go fry up some fish, literally like right out of the water.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
That's awesome. All right. Well, guys, we got to take a quick break. Listen carefully to this song. This is like the story of Tom if you listen closely here.
My kids like it.
Billy Joel.
Well, I'm on the Down Easter Alexa, and I'm cruising through Block Island Sound. I have charted a course to the vineyard, but tonight gun diesel back in Montauk yesterday, left this morning from the Bell and Gardner's Bay. Like all the locals here, I've had to sell my home. Too proud to leave, I worked my fingers to the bone so I could own my Down Easter Alexa. And I go where the ocean is deep. Giants out there in the canyons, and a good
back. I'm in the studio with Tom from Motorcycle Works. It's a pleasure to have him here. We're talking about fishing and BMW motorcycles. This is a dream episode for me here. and Tom, you have this reputation again. I won't harp too much on it as a scary, tough guy. And yet, you know, you've got two great kids. You've got, you know, you cruise around the neighborhood with they're doing like a chef photo shoot out in front of me. I'm getting distracted here. Tell me the story about your daughter when she was this young.
Yeah, she was only 5 years old. It was kind of a funny thing. My mom was filming her, and she was out on the dock on Freeport Bay. And being a child of divorce, I had a hard time thinking that she was benefiting from any of the things that I would teach her.
Right, having doubts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was one of the best days that I ever lived with watching the film. And my daughter was outside on the dock and going through the tackle box. And as my mom's filming her, she went through every piece in the tackle box saying, and this is used, this dad uses this for catching his flounder. And this is for when he catches porgies. And this one's for the sea bass. And blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But she was like a human sponge.
And you didn't even remember telling her this stuff.
Well, no, I told her things, but I mean, she was so young,
right?
You know, I showed them how to fillet a flounder at 4 years old, kind of thing,
right?
And they were doing it by the time they were five.
That's awesome.
And not lopping their fingers off and stuff. I'm sure if their mother would ever have known, she probably would have had a canary or something.
That's, you know, it's funny because that's always the way it was for me growing up. It was like I had my sort of Cambridge mom, Cambridge, Massachusetts, most liberal sort of, you know, place on the planet. Mm-hmm. And kids didn't hunt and fish in Cambridge, Mass.
Right.
But then on visitation days, I would go out to see my father and they were big time sport fishermen. You know, my grandfather handed me a gun when I was like 5 years old and said, go use this, learn to shoot. And of course he knew the lesson. He knew I'd go kill a bird when I was too young to, you know, crying, came back to him, and then I learned the lesson. I'm like, oh my God, that's what this thing does, right?
I was all into always teaching them the right ways of doing things on the water,
right?
And not just necessarily killing things for sport,
right?
Whatever we went out to catch, if we decided if it was we were going to kill it, we were going to eat it.
Yeah.
And most of the stuff was all catch and release, and teach them just the the good ways of being brought up on marine life. And
I remember too, you know, lessons in that, which was, you know, my grandfather always clubbed the fish. Any fish that we were going to keep, he either, you know, severed its head quickly or he clubbed it so it didn't just kick around the bottom of
blood
the boat.
Blood on the boat.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
But it was a great lesson. Some people now they see me do that and they're like, that is disgusting. Right. How could you ever do that? I'm like, how can you leave a fish just flopping?
Sure.
It's suffocating if you do that.
And it's also tainting the meat.
And the meat.
Yeah.
Exactly. Let's talk about the meat. How do you cook your fish?
A lot of times I enjoy barbecue. I barbecue about 360 days out of the year.
Right.
And my big thing is to make like some kind of a lime marinade or anything that has to do with limes, and just basic salt, pepper, a few herbs.
Okay.
And put that on a fresh caught 2-hour-old striped bass.
Right.
Throw it in some tinfoil, put it on a barbecue.
Done.
Man, that's the best.
Done. You know, if you've got good fish, you really don't need a recipe.
It's the simple things in life.
No, yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
And as far as keeping that meat as, you know, tender and healthy as you can, are you guys flash freezing when you're out on the water, or what do you do?
Well, it depends where we are, what kind of fishing we're doing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, if we're 100, 200 miles offshore,
right.
Yeah, everything gets flash frozen right there.
Okay. And then, some people, this was news to me as well, but a fish that's struggling on the bottom of the boat, right? It's banging itself up, right? So it's bruising its meat, basically.
Right.
So, and then bleeding a fish, is that the same as bleeding, say, a deer or something like that?
Yes, it's exactly the same. Yeah, there are specific techniques in bleeding certain fish, tuna, for example. There could be about anywhere from 11 to 17 cuts on a creature, depending on what it is.
And I know with, like, say, bluefish or even striped bass, you can get away with it. But would tuna, would the meat be totally tainted if you didn't bleed it?
Yeah.
It would be.
Yeah.
Wow.
It won't taste the same.
Right.
It also depends on how you're catching them. What they do is, like, the Japanese will do core samples of a fish.
Right. I've seen that. You get it's to the amazing. Dock,
and they will tell you exactly how you caught the fish, how long it took you to catch the fish, and what technique you used to catch the fish.
It's incredible. They take this metal straw, like
auger almost. Yeah.
And then they literally, like, you shove it into the fish, and then you pull it out, and then you have this way to kind of, like, feed out the meat, so it's a big string.
The way they do core samplings of the earth.
That's what it is. It looks like a core sample, and you hold it up to the light, and you can see the meat perfectly.
Right.
And you can see the gradation.
They tend to cook themselves from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you'll see the core of their spines, the meat that's surrounding that, as the beast is being pulled up, and you're fighting it more and more and more.
Right.
They literally cook themselves from the inside out, and you'll see the meat get tainted.
Because they die from exhaustion and overworking themselves. So
the key is to be a good fisherman, not to horse the fish onto the...
Because the more trauma to the animal, the more the meat's going to...
The more it affects the taste of the meat.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, the quality of the meat,
Right. And then, I guess, I don't know, if you were to have your way, what would be your favorite fish
to catch?
Both. Cook and catch.
Well, there's always something about, like, catching a big mako. Now, those things, they bite back, you know?
Right. Where do you do that?
Oh, you can go out to any number of the marinas out in Long Island, anything from Montauk all the way in to Sheepshead Bay. I mean,
I would love to go, but my passion for surfing makes me feel like I'm really asking for trouble if I start shark fishing.
Oh, well, you never know.
It's payback time.
Yeah. Well, you believe in karma?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. I do. And so, so you go out, say Montauk, right? Isn't that where Jaws was sort of set?
Sure.
And that fish out there is a shark that is hanging in Montauk. I remember I had a girlfriend at one point, and I was like, come surfing with me. We're going to go to Montauk.
She goes, caught by Frank Mundus,
She said to me, she goes, there are sharks out there. I said, no, there aren't. We went on the internet. Boom. First article, Frank
Mundus
had caught the biggest great white shark off of the lighthouse, basically. Yeah. 17 and a half feet on a rod and reel.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Terrifying. Yeah. Makes you never want to surf in Montauk.
Right.
And they see him out there.
Yeah.
So you've caught makos. I don't even know how you do it. It's like deep sea.
There's all kinds of techniques, but they'll take they'll butterfly a bluefish.
Yep.
And they have a really large sized hook, and you're dealing with steel wire.
Okay.
When you're not talking about running any kind of plastic.
No filament here.
Nah.
Right.
But. I mean, the cool thing about it is that to be able to catch something that can easily eat you and screw you up.
It's so scary. You need a fairly big boat, too, don't you?
Yeah, but, I mean, Mundus, he did that on I think, maybe a 17-foot wooden boat.
But the problem is when you bring the shark up onto the boat.
That could be a big problem.
It's not dead yet.
Yeah, no.
You need to know for sure. No. They have rifles on board, don't they?
Well, yeah, but that's kind of stupid. You're not going to shoot in the boat. Didn't you ever see that commercial? The guy's down there.
You go right through the bottom of the boat.
And then the boat sinks. Yeah, and he's in the shark cage.
Right.
Yeah, you know? Great stuff. Tell
me about that. We were talking about this guy. He's totally insane. He's a masshole like myself, of course. And he takes kayaks out tuna fishing with fairly light tackle, and this guy has a small kayak. This is not like a deep sea kayak with
I've only seen it on YouTube.
But
apparently he's just on a regular type of kayak,
and tiny out miles,
and he was going for some smaller tuna, or maybe tunnies or some kind of small pelagic fish. And his dumb luck, he kept banging and banging in this pod and wasn't catching anything, but now this 300-pound yellowfin tuna come popping out of nowhere and right. drag them out to sea, or at least a few hours.
They call it a Nantucket sleigh ride back uh-huh. from the nice. Whaling days, uh-huh. which literally was when you harpooned a whale, you had about a 15-mile ride. Yeah. Literally, you were going to go skipping across waves, and everybody's holding on for their lives.
Yeah. It brings a different meaning to the old saying, European, God's a pea shooter.
right. <you know? laughs> And this guy goes out now. This is his sport now.
Yeah, but to see this huge yellowfin across the bow of his boat,
right.
of his kayak, right. pretty impressive.
He says now that he's set up. Before he wasn't, as he said, it was almost an accident. But right. now he says he knows how if he nails a 600-pound tuna uh-huh. or bigger, he knows what to do with it.
Okay. Good luck with that, pal.
First, he'll chase it to Florida, I guess.
I'll watch it on YouTube.
But he says also he brings out walkie-talkies. Mm-hmm. He's got one of those reflector mirrors, so you know he's gotten
high-tech now.
He's right. totally high-tech because uh-huh. his thing. He goes, it's stupid enough what I'm doing.
Right.
The last thing I need is to call in the Coast Guard. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. he wants those guys on his side.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's got to be an adrenaline rush.
Right.
You know?
Right.
There's a junkie out there in every aspect.
Right.
I'm sure.
Would you rather be fishing or riding motorcycles?
Oh, this time of year?
Well, that's easy.
I ride motorcycles all the time. Yeah. I mean, the cold is not an issue for me. Mm. You wear the right apparel, and you could pretty much go anywhere.
Well, now you have my fairing on the front of your freaking bike.
Oh, I got my bat wing going on there. Yeah, no,
I'm keeping you warm. Think of me when you're warm riding.
But the thing I worry about would be if I'm on a solo bike, would be black ice. That's the difference between a solo rider and a sidecar. The solo rider slows down when he approaches the curve.
Right.
The sidecar speeds up, and he wants that rear wheel to break loose, and you want to slide, slip. You know, you want to do donuts like you right. can in the car. It's a pisser.
I hated it, man. I took the sidecar off because it's just like, well, in the city, it's the most ridiculous thing.
It's not too conducive to city riding.
It's not. And as far as winter fishing, do you do much of that?
I have in the past. I did not do any this year. Mm. I mean, short of the stripers that was on. The last day the Yankees won the title. It was pretty cold that night.
See, I was fishing that night as well, and uh-huh. it was perfect because we fished some questionable locations. Uh-huh. And what we knew is that all the security guards were going to be glued to the TV. So for sneaking around in Greenpoint, nobody was wasting their time fishermen on the pier.
We were off a breezy point. Uh-huh. There was a lot of wind kicking up, but we had a really good captain at the time, and he just got doing the drifts over the rips, and every pass we were catching fish, nice size. The biggest one was a 40-inch striper, which was good stuff.
And I would imagine that you had the game airing on.
The captain piped it in. Yeah,
so you're fishing to the Yankees.
It was good stuff. Yeah,
that's insane.
I liked it.
I won't tell you now that I'm.
I missed the game, you know, but I didn't think they were going to win that game. I figured they'd get it in Game 7.
Yeah,
and I took a roll and I said, I got to go out, and I was jonesing for.
But that's
fish.
The best of both worlds. I mean, you're fishing and you're listening to the game. The only thing that would have been better is if the Red Sox had been in that game and beaten you guys. But it's cool.
They had their turn.
Awesome. Okay. Well, guys, it's been a really special day here. Because I have my buddy Tom, who is, I hope that I've squelched some of your scary reputation on this episode. Maybe now people will come to you and they won't be. Or do you want them to be scared? Maybe it's better for you.
No, I gotta be nicer. I don't know. You know what? Just have people have to grow a little set of balls or something. And again, courtesy goes a long way.
Well, as you said, everyone's got big balls when they're writing reviews on you from their home computer.
Yeah.
But what I can say to you guys is don't be scared of Tom. And if you don't have a motorcycle or you don't have anything to bring him, but you really just want to meet the legend, just come with a fish or come with some photos of some fish, and you might get lucky and you might have the chance to chat with the guy. Anyways, you've heard it here. It's another episode of Catch It, Cook It, Eat It, sponsored by Techsurf.
Gee, it must be great riding with him. Is he picking you up after school today?
Mm-mm.
By the way, where'd you meet him? Yes, we see.
That's when I fell for
the leader of the pack.
down, down.